Hey, how are you all doing? Welcome to the Total Bitcoin Podcast Show. My name is Kevan Davani, the Total Connector. Now, after my deep, intense, fascinating talks with Jeff Booth, Titus Gebel, or another special episode, Hassler Cook and Thorsten Hoffman, the filmmaker, I'm really excited to announce the next talk is going to be with Carlo Rosenbaum, the author of Rocking Bitcoin, and Knut Swanholm, the author of Bitcoin Independence Reimagined. That was his last book. It's already on the way to be translated into German, or it's already been translated, maybe. And his first book was Sovereignty Through Mathematics. So really brilliant minds, highly intellectual, but they're so skilled, so talented to break down the language, to break down the technical jargon and terminology, and really make this Bitcoin space, even the technological aspects, really accessible to people. But this is not what the talk is going to be about. It's again in continuation of the idea that I had and written down in the short brainstorm article, Human Life Rooted in Bitcoin, which is dedicated to all children, all born and unborn children, to the total humanity. And again, we've got to ask ourselves, how do we envision practically concrete ideas, right? Tangibly, the daily life of the average person out there, once we are in a Bitcoinized, hyper-Bitcoinized world, in free private cities, rooted in Bitcoin, with truly free market principles, with true capitalism, with true freedom, with true ethos of Bitcoin, and an unleashing of unimaginable power of scientific, technological, creativity and innovation, 0 to 1 innovation, totally new infrastructures on every level you can think of. So it's all about now visualizing it, translating this knowledge, the bigger picture, into a short video, teaser, trailer, and then have it then crowdfunded, produce it, and make it really, really strong, so that people not only feel it in the hearts, but they understand, they comprehend, the question, why Bitcoin? What's the intention? What's the real vision? What is real? It's not utopian, it's not dystopian, it's not sci-fi, it's reality. But we need to have that intention, we need to have that clear vision. What are we trying to achieve here? Not only for a small circle of people, but for total humanity, like structurally, transformational change. I'm really talking about structural transformation and evolutionary transformation on every level you can think of. So without further ado, this is my talk with Carlo Rosenbaum and Knut Swanholm. Let me know what you think. Like, retweet, share, follow me, subscribe, please. Write a positive review. Helps a lot. And share this video, share this interview, share this podcast. And thanks so much for your support. And talk to you soon.
You can see me a bit better now.
Welcome to the Total Connector Show and the Total Bitcoin Podcast Show. My name is Kevan Davani. I'm so excited to have my two special guests back again, Carlo Rosenbaum and Knut Swanholm, some of the best renowned and really brightest authors on Bitcoin and Bitcoin's rabbit hole. So Carlo Rosenbaum is the author of Grokking Bitcoin, where he brilliantly really illustrates and explains the technical topics, makes it really accessible. And Knut Swanholm is the author of even translated into German some of his books, is Sovereignty Through Mathematics and Independence Reimagined. And by the way,
Carlo's book is also in German, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to the show. I didn't know you also wrote another book. It's called 3 Minute Reads on Bitcoin. Was that your first book?
Yeah, it's just a prototype. That's just like my articles that year compiled into a book. So pay no attention to that.
Gotcha. Yeah. So we were just talking about free markets and beer, I think, in Sweden. So how is the free market situation in Sweden?
It's getting slightly better over time. It's a long process, though. I mean, in Sweden, most services were institutional or state run by state. For example, the pharmacies were monopolized before, but there is now a free market for pharmacies. So it's getting better, I think. I don't know if anything speaks against that, Knut. Do you have any counterexamples?
Yeah, I would say it's getting better compared to how Sweden was before, but of course we still have the same problem as every other country with inflationary currencies, which makes like we have only pseudo free markets like everywhere else, as I view it.
But Sweden is definitely has proven its point by, by not somehow imitating or replicating all these lockdown measures which have taken place everywhere else. I mean, these insane lockdown measures. So they've actually proven just through numbers by showing that, by not executing these lockdown measures, they have what, some of the lowest. Can you talk about that a little bit, about the COVID situation, the so-called COVID situation in Sweden?
Yeah, we had a the deaths increased, of course, in Sweden, but now they have moved back, and we actually have negative excessive deaths now because of COVID. So people who should have died anyway died just a little bit earlier. So it seems to have worked out pretty fine in Sweden. And I think maybe you could attribute this to the genius of the government. But I'm not sure. Erik Wall, for example, had a nice thread on Twitter where he argued that Sweden's position on this is not because of some brilliant minds or it's more like it's just a reluctance to action. I'm not sure I agree with that, but because I think there is some level of trust in the experts from the politician side. The politicians trust the experts in Sweden. So I think it might be a little bit of both. I wouldn't say it's just a reluctance for action. It's actually driven by some science as well.
Yeah, but I would say the scientists are reluctant to act as well, because which is partly because they're afraid to get the blame. But in general, I think we Swedes in general are reluctant. We're afraid of conflict and reluctant to act. That's like in our DNA. But in this particular case, I'm very happy to live here because of the lack of lockdowns and the lack of like draconian measures, as I guess we all are. And when you say that people die, but they died a bit earlier, there's another way of looking at that, because it sounded a bit funny. But I would say that a lockdown steals time from people's lives as well. So if you lock 10 million people down for 2 weeks, that's like stealing 2 weeks times 10 million lifetime from people. So a lockdown is also a death sentence in a way, as are taxes and as are inflation.
Do you have to wear masks in like over here in Austria, like in public transportation and gross and supermarkets and
No,
No.
not really. They're
Wow.
voluntary.
That's awesome. Amazing.
We just have guidelines like keep your distances and wash your hands a lot. That's
Okay.
basically it.
That
And
sounds
that's.
rational. What you guys doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, some things are prohibited. You can't organize things with more than 50 people, for example. like concerts and stuff with more than 50 people is prohibited. And high schools were closed, but they have reopened now again.
They had their classes online instead. Most high schools and the universities, they had their classes online, and I guess the universities still have that to quite a large extent. And we have, like, at my job, we're working for, like, half the team is working on location for a week, and then there's the other half of the team. So we switch. We have a week each, so there's fewer people in the office, at least on paper.
You know, Sweden, I mean, I've never been to Sweden, but, you know, I heard so many people, I myself, you know, have a high, what do you call it, high opinion, or somehow I adore somehow the situation in Sweden, because you guys, especially in a lot of fields, you know, would it be at least what it appears to be, you know, like gender equality, like is... is that true? Like
don't go there, Kevan.
Don't go there. This is sort of a taboo topic here.
Okay, gotcha.
Because you're sort of not allowed to have certain opinions, and that is, yeah, all the progress we're making in gender equality and gay rights and whatever are like balanced out by. by a decrease in freedom of expression.
Oh, interesting.
That's the mild way of putting it. And I won't give up any secrets on my opinions on this and that, because there's a real threat I would lose my job if I had the wrong opinion.
Yeah. I think Jacobson, what's his name? David Jacobson, Peter Jacobson, he there's been a lot of, you know, discussions and controversial discussions going on what Sweden is concerned. But anyway, let's go to this very specific topic I wanted to talk to you about, and wanted to hear your thoughts, your ideas, and want to brainstorm with you about it. So after I read the book of Jeff Booth and of Titus Gebel, Free Private Cities. And Jeff Booth's book, you know, is just, you know, everybody just loves Jeff because he breaks down complex, seemingly complex things into really simple language where you begin to understand the bigger picture, you know, with the subtitle of his book. I mean, The Price of Tomorrow is the book, and the subtitle is Deflation, Why Deflation is the Key to an Abundant Future. So I sat down, we had a chat with Stephanie von Jahn. She was my co-moderator together with Titus Gebel and Jeff Booth. And even before that, I had somehow this inspirational enlightenment, you know, what if we could, you know, like, make a movie? Because we, you know, there's, like you guys, you know, you write books, you write articles, there's a bunch of podcasts, materials, documentaries, there's so much educational materials out there in order to understand the root causes, right, of this shit that we are in, this whole centralized inflationary and soon hyperinflationary world we're going in. The so-called legalized theft system perpetrated by central banks and governments, the oppressive regimes, you know, I mean, everything you can think of goes back to the root of the money system, or the fiat money system. But I always try to ask my guests on my show, as you've known, you know, I try to ask them, like, what is it? How do you envision humanity? Like, what is the future? Like, if an average person comes up to you and say, okay, I got it now. I understand the root causes. I've read tons of books, articles, you know, listened to a bunch of podcasts, and now I understand the root causes. I get it now. I get a bigger picture. Now, if Bitcoin, and I, you know, we all agree that, but I'm just trying to play the devil's advocate here, sort of, you know, like, what if an average person comes up to you and say, okay, you know, I got it now, but what does the future hold for us? Like, once Bitcoin is not necessarily hyper-Bitcoinized, but if we have, let's say we have a miniaturized human civilization, we have a free private cities, a citadel city, whatever you want to call it, and we have, like, true free market principles. We have free capitalism. We have a provider, a service provider that protects your liberty, health, life, your property, and everything else is free market. And the monetary root layer is all rooted in Bitcoin. What would the daily life of the average person look like? Right? What is the average person about to expect? Because I can give you, it's funny, if you ask me, I have a very, very concrete and specific vision and picture what the future gonna look like, whether it is 10 years or 30 years. So please.
Shall I begin?
Please.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, it's always tricky to predict the future, and it's, I see why people are reluctant to go there, and as have I been several times. But I think it all depends on how deep into hyper Bitcoinization we are. But the more of a sound money free market economy we have, the less violence there will be in society, and we will put in fewer hours per day to work. And this is mainly because what I think everyone is missing in their thinking when arguing for universal basic income and stuff like that and social programs is that to a poor person, lower prices are more important than an income. Like, lower prices is good for everyone. And that's what deflation does, and that's what a sound money free market economy will do. And you will have to work, but you will not have to work as much. If we had a functioning global free market sound money system, the effort that a single person would have to put in would be a lot less in order to afford a lot more. Because as I say in Independence Reimagine, right now, money is the cheapest thing to produce there is. So what that leads to is that the prices of everything else goes up over time, except for stuff that is actually even cheaper to produce per day than money. And that used to be electronics, because they had such an exponential lowering of the price per megabyte because of how the manufacturing industry for those things exploded during the last 30 years or so. But Moore's law has sort of leveled out a bit, and I think that is partly due to we've hit sort of a ceiling there of how small the chips can get. But there's also the monetary aspect, that the money is cheaper and cheaper to produce every day. And if it was the other way around, if the money we used was the absolutely most expensive thing there was to produce, then the prices of everything else would go down in comparison to that. And that is what we're seeing in Bitcoin. We're seeing it well, it's actually a fast forward, but it feels like slow motion because it lingers around 10,000 for a while. But what we've seen over 11 years is the prices denominate of everything else denominated in Bitcoin has gone down, and they've gone down a lot. Prices of everything else goes down over time compared to the money that is the hardest thing to produce and the most expensive thing to produce in society. So this is the basic that was the basic argument for gold, and it's even more true for Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is better than gold in every way. It's more scarce, and it's teleportable, and it's magic, and you can assign it to anything. You can print a QR code and put it to your old Volvo and make your Volvo more valuable than a Lamborghini, and without any effort. You can hide an open dime in a geocaching thing for a kid to find with $10 million in it. You can remember 24 words and go wherever you want. It's a new world. And as I've been arguing in my latest article in Citadel 21, imagine a world in which the most part of like the biggest part of people's wealth were in their heads or somewhere unconfiscatable. Then in order to extract value from your fellow man, you would have to provide something of value for them, rather than to coerce them and force them into behaving in certain ways, which is what we're doing now. We're coercing people into behaving in certain ways. If you don't pay your taxes, sooner or later you will end up in jail. And that is coercion. So from a strict moral standpoint, I believe a true sound money free market economy would benefit everyone in ways we cannot imagine because of the lower prices. Yeah,
I'm gonna take a little bit more modest stance here, I think. But I agree on most of your points. But if we want to imagine a sound money world or a hyper Bitcoinization world, we can look at how the world was looking when we had a hyper goldized world. Gold was pretty hard money, so. I think we can get some hints by looking at history and see how the world looked then. And I think people had sex and people had to eat and have sex. So I think people will continue doing that. And if we look at the... To talk about your stuff with the banks and freedom and all that stuff. Today we have the state at the top, and we have the Fed in the US, the central bank, and you have the big banks, and you have the retail banks, and you have the businesses, and you have the people in a great, huge pyramid. And the current system benefits the ones at the top, of course, today. And Bitcoin reverses that process. So Bitcoin benefits the people at the bottom the most, and the people who have most to lose is at the top. So I think Bitcoin will be a huge liberating force for people, just as you said.
I love you. I love your fundamental approach. I love your You know what really drives me when I think about the future, a realistic future. It's not, I'm not talking about some utopian or dystopian or sci-fi. I'm talking about like the science and technology we have already. If that could be unleashed through the monetary economical structure, just imagine, you just said it, just people cannot even imagine what future could look like. But I mean, I can, maybe the three of us, maybe we've somehow read a lot of things or know what the real potential is, with it be on a scientific level, technological level, resources, all these things that that maybe even have been somehow somehow suppressed or compartmentalized, in the military industrial sector. This is what makes me really excited. Like on an infrastructural level, would it be transportation, energy production, energy efficiency, recycling, environmental technologies, medicine, anti-aging, molecular biology, genetics. I mean, every field you can think of. Once this power is unleashed, once we have free market principle, as everything you said, I totally agree with you. But I'm just saying, I see a much, much more exponential. And Jeff Booth said it himself. He said, technology, you can't stop that. Technology is deflationary. It has a huge power. So so central banks, governments are actually fighting against gravitation, he says. So if this exponential curvature accelerates, every whatever 18 months, 2 years, and I'm not talking about I don't want to restrict it because most people restrict it like to information technologies, AI, robotics, I mean, a little bit boring for me. For me, the real exciting stuff comes in the other sectors, right?
Yeah.
And what if people really then have, just need to work voluntarily because they love their job, like 15 to 20 hours per week maximum. And the rest, they just contribute with whatever they want to contribute with. Whether it be creativity, teaching children, doing experiments, doing research, doing science. Let's zoom a little bit out. or habitation.
Yes, an additional point to this question. The world has not been on a gold standard for quite some time now, and all the gold standards were before mass transposition, before mass media, and definitely before the internet. So we can't really, well, it's a comparison to make, but we have to take into account how much faster progress we have in every sector now, even though we have inflationary currencies. So like you said, Jeff Booth compared technological progress to gravitation. You can't really stop it. And but with a free market sound money economy, that process would be accelerate in unimaginable ways. And we talk about utopias and everything, but I really think, like, on a yearly scale, not much happens in a year, but on a 10-year scale, a lot can happen. Just look back 10 years from, look at a movie from 2010, and just a low budget movie and the special effects. You can make them all on your phone now. So a lot can happen in 10 years. But to your question there about what I think the future will look like, I mean, look at this conversation we're having now. But me and Kalle could do this because we had like a spare hour in the evening, and we have that spare hour because we have quite well-paying jobs and a quite stable situation at home, so we have a bit of time over to chit chat about this stuff and write our books and whatever we choose to do with our time. But if we had Bitcoin, we would be working a lot less for the same amount of like time freedom, I believe. And you have to remember with technological revolutions that every tool that mankind has ever come up with has been invented in order to save him time. From like the hair trimmer to the lawnmower to the computer to the car to whatever you want, it's there to save time. And so that's what tools do. They save us time. And if we had a fully functional free market, we would have a lot more time on our hands, because what has basically happened the last 50 years is that we invented all the tools, but we're still stuck in the fucking hamster's wheel all day and doing the same old things, like working the same amount of time, even though we invented all of these tools. And it's bizarre. It should be the other way around. The more tools we invent, the less we should work. So, but that's what fiat has done to us. And it's so hard to see, because you work about the same amount as you did. Like, look at the 50s, where a single salary could provide a family of 10 children with a good living standard. And nowadays, both parents have to work, and both parents have to take care of the kids, and both parents have to do commute and do whatever, everything. So, like, we haven't really saved any time. And I think the fiat system is the main arch enemy, the main villain here that has caused this to happen this way.
Yeah, and we talk about hyper-Bitcoinization, but I'm not so sure yet that Bitcoin can accommodate the whole world's wealth. Technically, I'm not sure. I'm not convinced about that. I think it might. There's a good chance, probably, with layer 2 technologies and all that. But we need to stay humble to the technology, and we can't just yet say that we will be able to hyper Bitcoinize the world. But I sincerely hope so. And I also think that transition will be peaceful. And I think that the slower the process the more peaceful it will be. That's my hope at least. But I'm afraid it will be bloody. powerful states just won't give up that easily.
I've been thinking about that a lot lately, about how violent the whole thing can be or will be. But the more I think about it, the more I think like what Bitcoin does, it is it's disincentivizes coercion. So it mitigates the risk, and regardless of how violent it will be, it will be less violent than if we didn't have Bitcoin, and that's the important part.
Yeah.
And I agree. But those are valid. Kalle's points are valid. We don't know if we can accommodate the whole world economy in Bitcoin, and we don't know if hyper Bitcoinization is a real scenario. But I still feel that there's some value to thinking about these things and to imagining these things and putting the thoughts out there, because it might just trigger something in another person's brain, and people might start seeing things a bit differently. And even if it isn't Bitcoin that does it, like if we go back to gold standard or whatever, that's still better than what we have now. So thinking about these things is important.
Yeah, and you know, people, I mean, you can sense that literally wherever you are. You can sense people have fears. They have fears confronting their own fears. So I thought, you know, that's the reason I wrote this short brainstormed article that I sent you guys. Is like I was like, what if we can visualize this? What if the timing is so mature right now? Because people sense it. They don't know what's coming. You know, is it going to be the euro is going to be in a crash? Is the euro going to crash by next year? Because everything, you know, not only the banks, but a lot of, you know, the whole economy is going to be insolvent. And they're going to be so, so indebted because of the European Central Bank. Or, you know, you take any other places, you know, whether it be in America or in Sweden, I mean, people, I think, sense there's a change coming, there's a transformation coming. So as you said, the transition, I totally agree with you, the transition is the key. It's not going to be totally frictionless. There is going to be some kind of chaos, there is going to be some kind of panic and friction and, maybe even blood. You know, we don't know that, but I think Bitcoin facilitates that transition. So this article that I sent you guys is, you know, this is sort of for me the brainstorming for an idea for a film movie, for a film, whether it be a documentary or a combination of testimonials and documentary, and maybe even, you know, some kind of visualization what the future could look like. You know, that's why I wrote all this down. I wrote down these questions so that everybody can ask themselves, you know, what is it that we wish or we desire for the future? What is the future? You know, what would I want for myself, for my, you know, for our child that's going to be born in December? Like, what is it that, you know, instead of like repeating the root causes and the problems, you know, what if we show, okay, what's the opposite of slavery, of modern slavery? What's the opposite of modern slavery then? What is the opposite of inflation? That's deflation, right? What is the opposite hardship? That is prosperity and abundance. So I'm totally convinced. I just know that we have so much potential, so much human resources, creative potential, technological potential. Once that is unleashed, but it needs, I'm totally aware of that, it needs a critical adoption rate, and it needs some kind of acceleration. And I think this film can not only inspire, but really incentivize more and more people to understand, like, oh, this is the future that, you know, that we are somehow with lowest time preference saving up to, you know. Does it make sense?
I'd love to contribute somehow to a film.
Definitely.
Let me just say goodnight to my kids.
Good night.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry about that. Anyway, the future for these people when they grow up, I would love to contribute to a film in any way I can. And I think a good, and I would love for Kalle to debunk every stupid idea we put out there.
We need voices like Khaled because I think it has a role to ground us a little bit, like even ground me especially, in my fantasies, you know, like.
Yeah, we need someone who actually knows what he's talking about.
I'm not much of a visionary, but I can debunk some bullshit.
Yeah, good thing. And Kevan, have you seen the Zeitgeist movies from like 15 years back?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, wasn't there like two or three parts of it? Like it was
there were
the
three
part?
Parts. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those struck a chord with me when I saw them the first time. But I felt then, and I feel even more now, that the conclusion they drew was slightly off.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They were completely right in their analysis of organized religion and money printing and the state and all the institutions and everything, and how those are only social constructs and constructs of the human mind, and how they are used to control huge amounts of people. But the missing thing from those films is Bitcoin, of course. And if we make like a movie that is similar to that, but I know you like the sci-fi stuff, but maybe a bit less of that and a bit more like sound things and talking about Bitcoin as a solution instead of everyone just magically being helpful to each other, because that simply doesn't happen.
yeah, but that was the intention behind it, like interview you know, a spectrum of people, like you guys, you know, economists, technologists, scientists, people who really know what they're talking about, especially in their respective field of science and technology. Or structural, I'm really interested in structural transformation, in structural changes. This is because once we have the structural transformation, as Bitcoin is the ultimate structural change. I mean, once we transform the monetary root layer, everything else is going to be accelerated. I don't know why I'm so convinced about that, but that it will have sort of a cascading, you know, effect, a chain reaction, you know?
Yeah, I have one more to say goodnight to.
Go ahead.
Okay, and that's what we said about Linux in 95. We said this is going to be the year of the Linux desktop, and 96 is going to be the year of the Linux desktop. So there was a lot of hope in Linux that it would overtake the desktop market, but it didn't. It instead overtook the server market.
So we
will be severely surprised of what we'll see, and hopefully pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, that's the thing, the server market. I mean, Linux completely ruled that thing right now. And
yeah.
Facebook is built on top of Linux, and Google is built on top of Linux, right? Kalle, you know these things better than I do, but...
Yeah, the whole internet infrastructure is Linux, yeah.
Yeah, and this is why... where Bitcoin should be. It should be in the base layer of everything. Like that's much more important than unicorns is the word.
Yeah.
I can only recommend you guys that whenever you have some time to read this book by Titus Gebel, because this is, you know, this fusion of Jeff Booth's book, The Price of Tomorrow, Why Deflation is the Key to an Abundant Future, with Titus Gebel, somehow he founded Free Private Cities, and there's the first official project now going on in Honduras. And I'm like, what if we don't have one, two, three? It's not a special economic zone, it's a real free private zone where a service provider, a contractual partner, comes to you, you sign a contract, and, you know, instead of the government trying to, you know, provide the very essential services like, you know, security, protection of liberty, health, life, protection of property, right? It's property yeah. rights, right? What if we, you know, what if a contractual private partner can do that not only much more efficiently, but much cheaper?
Yep. Those things are happening all over the place. There's one guy building like floating cities, and there's Liberstad in Norway, which is like a part of Norway which the government can't get to, I guess, because it's too deep in the forest and too high up the mountains or something. And there's Liberland in like the border between some of the Balkan countries, right? Or wherever that is. There are some private nations. There's an old oil rig that some crazy Brit has made his own flag for and lives in. And
I'm not sure anyone lives in Liberland.
No, me neither. But they do accept Bitcoin. I saw the Honduras one in another documentary, I believe. But which was all smeared with shitcoinery.
Oh, really?
The documentary was all about shitcoins, yeah, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, that's the one aspect. I just don't understand why Titus Gebel doesn't, maybe that's his blind spot, you know, because Bitcoin is itself inherently the free market. Why do we have, you know, to deal with all kinds of shitcoins and other concepts? You know, Bitcoin is in itself. The free market, you know. I think Sven Schnieders wrote articles about that and a bunch of other people. So I think there's some, if we can clarify or somehow enlighten these people with their specific expertise and knowledge, like what Bitcoin can do to, you know, make this more holistic and more rooted,
yep.
then we have actually, you know, come a long way then. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's hope that a number of states don't collude to actually co-opt Bitcoin and make it theirs and afford everyone to do KYC, otherwise they'll censor your transactions. We'll, let's hope they don't do that, because that's going to be that's going to be a complete mess.
So you don't think it's going to spur actually more competition once, you know, let's say, smaller or bigger countries start adopting and, you know, making it for, you know, their own?
My hope is that smaller countries start actually using Bitcoin, but I don't see that happening. It's going to be a grassroots movement until the last drop of blood.
Yeah, and I've been talking about this on a lot of pods lately. How would that work? Like, of course, custodial solutions, but someone would have to be in charge of the private keys. And have you thought about this, Kalle? Like, how would you set up a multisig for government to? They can't even take care of stuff now. So how the hell would they? How would that even work?
Yeah.
How could a nation state own Bitcoin? They redefine the concept of ownership, because now knowing is owning. It's the same thing. The information about the underlying asset is the underlying asset. So it's a whole different story. Nation states won't exist if this succeeds.
I think every politician signer will have to have a trusted engineer.
Yeah, and that. Yeah. That engineer will be trustworthy until the day he isn't, where he remembers the seed phrase and gets the fuck out of there.
Yeah, but if it's a 10 out of 12 multisig and there's, you could probably come pretty far with it. It's not perfect, but I think it is perfect.
That's the point.
Okay, but it's still better than actually Göran Persson or Stefan Löfven carrying his own key.
Yeah.
By the way, Stefan Löfven is the prime minister of Sweden.
Yeah, unfortunately, but I think this opens a whole new can of worms. Well, like. How would that actually work? A nation state owning Bitcoin or a large corporation owning Bitcoin? How would that actually work? I mean, Gemini is one thing, but that's
either totally centralized, like one or very few people hold the private keys in a multisig, or just centralized, totally centralized, or totally like super multi-signature, like a bunch of people,
hundreds
of people.
Yeah. I think they have to use some kind of multi-sig solution, but I don't think they will handle it themselves. They have assistants for everything, so why don't they have an assistant for managing the keys?
Yeah, but this is my point. If number keeps going up, those persons will be more powerful than the actual government hiring them. Sooner or later, this will happen. It's a transitioning thing, and you don't become a politician because you're interested in numbers and cryptography. Politicians are a strange breed because, they have some obvious flaws when it comes to logical thinking, and I think this will help Bitcoin a lot, because so much will get lost on the way to them. I'm looking forward to nation states trying to hold Bitcoin a lot and seeing how that plays out and all the headlines and everything crashing.
Finally, they are inversing the inflation.
Yeah, we're trying to. But like I said, it will be a clusterfuck of unprecedented proportions.
I'm not so sure about that. I'm pretty sure they can get a decent security set up for them. I'm not so expensive. We'll see. It's not going to happen anyway. So.
No, probably not. Not in that way.
So, what I'm really interested in is visualizing what the daily life of the average person can look like. Like, if you ask somebody, would you rather live in an inflationary system where your money is worth less and less and less and the prices go up and up, or would you prefer paying less and less for better and better services and products, more innovative products, especially, would you like to go into retirement, into pension much earlier than right now, whatever age people are going into retirement right now. What is it, 65, 67, 70, whatever. So it's getting worse and worse. So what about, would you like to have more freedom? More free time to spend with your family, with your children, go more on vacation. I mean, all these things and all this hard work, hard jobs, they're going to be more and more, taken over by technology. By whatever that is, robotics, self-driving cars. So this is the future. It's already evolving. It's already unfolding. It's just a matter of time, right?
Yeah, but it's not unfolding in the right way yet, because we're still working our asses off. A typical family, both parents work full time or more, still. I don't think we are in that process yet.
No, not until we start adopting Bitcoin.
Yeah.
At least I would say there's a book by a guy called Jeremy Rifkin called Zero Marginal Cost. Have you heard about this? It's about how the production and the transportation of everything approaches zero over time. The cost of manufacturing, the cost of delivering stuff, and
one moment.
And this combined with Bitcoin, I think, will lead to a different society. About the question about what the everyday life will look like say. You can do whatever you want every day, but you are not any longer incentivized to spend everything you have on frivolous things, because everyone will still be more careful with their money since the prices are going down each day. So you always have something to gain by lowering your time preference and waiting for the prices to go down even further. And this is the beauty of the thing, that you can have better and better lives without spending more and more. You see, that's the real transitioning thing. I like to think about these things in absolute terms, because it's easier if you see where the vector is pointing and you go to the end of the arrow, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Kalle, if you're following me here. So it's just for argument's sake that I take the hyper-Bitcoinization scenario where everyone gets richer and richer by the day, and all they have to do is like spend less and less on frivolous things. Mm-hmm. Because you're incentivized to spend only on things that are more beneficial to you than holding the Bitcoin would have been. And those things are getting harder and harder to find, even now for Bitcoiners across the world, where there are more and more hodlers everywhere. We are more and more reluctant to spend our Bitcoins on actual stuff because we don't need stuff. Like, the last thing I spent Bitcoin on was like a subscription to Hodlenauts magazine. But I really feel that is worth spending my earned sats on. But few other things are. So I think people would spend less and less on frivolous things and more on actual capital goods and productive things. And this is the key difference between what we have now, the Keynesian frivolous spending on whatever and build a bridge to nowhere and make it half ready and then abandon the project and like...
Yeah.
So we will... resources will be allocated a lot better and a lot more effective.
Yeah, and basically what we need is food and sex. Then I'm happy.
Yeah, drinks.
And a roof.
And a roof, yeah. Maybe an air conditioner, a toothbrush maybe, a laptop, a bed.
okay.
Basic stuff, yeah.
A Lambo, yeah.
Oh, luxury.
Yeah, so let's wrap this up, guys. So what is it, is there anything coming up on your side, like another book or projects which we can look out for?
I have some ideas, but nothing worth starting another project for yet. But I have some ideas, just like something along the lines of when the line between the imagination and reality is blurred out by the ability to put a QR code sticker on anything and changing its value and like having value in your head and all this. And I would have to have Kalle proofread it again and hold me back a bit. But I think this idea of making a movie that's very intriguing to me, Kevan. If we can pull this off and get a team together, and like I would be happy to contribute to a screenplay. I always wanted to make a movie of some kind. I don't know how to approach it, but
Knut, you're already in the entertainment business. You're a singer. You're a rock singer.
I used to be.
Yeah.
Now I'm a Bitcoin. Philosopher, I guess.
Yeah.
You could do the soundtrack. Yeah. No, but that's all these ideas that you have. I mean, I'm just thinking that if we're able to visualize those for broader audience, for the mass of the people who don't read books, who don't read articles, who don't go down the rabbit because they don't have time, they don't have no energy, no patience for that. But if we can reach them, sort of over the visualized level, would it be Netflix or YouTube or whatsoever, but it just, if we can give them a glimpse into the future.
Yeah.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Then we can...
Did you see that last... Did you see that last film about Bitcoin that came out? What was it called? Something about gold or something about money. Oh, What was it called? It was really
hard
good.
To remember.
Hard film? No, you don't. Not hard film, right?
The Hard Money Film.
Yeah, Hard Money Film.
By Richard James.
That's the one.
Yeah, he did it actually with
Richard
budget.
James.
With zero budget. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's excellent. So if you haven't seen that, shout out to Richard James and go and see that film, Hard Money.
Yeah.
It's really good. Hardmoney.com, I think the website is.
And also talk with other
One guy.
Creators. Yeah.
Yeah, you should contact a guy, another Swede called Joni Appelberg.
Oh, I know this guy. I contacted this guy a long time ago. He does beautiful animations.
Beautiful animations.
Yeah,
and he stopped doing them a while back. And I'd really like to see him on the scene again, because I thought his little animations, they were really excellent stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love his work. Yeah, because it really, it visualizes, you know, it breaks things down
really high quality stuff. And I think he's criminally underrated in this space. So shout out to Joni Appelberg.
Exactly. Yeah.
Start doing Bitcoin stuff again.
Yeah.
So Kalle, Knut, thank you so much. I really enjoyed our talk. We should repeat those talks maybe in the near future. Maybe in a different tangent next time. I have some other ideas too, but I think we can keep this now to approximately an hour. Where can people find you, and where are your books available? Besides Amazon?
Kalle. Yeah. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Kalle Rosenbaum on Twitter. And you can read my book. Either you buy it from Amazon, Grokking Bitcoin, or you get it directly from the publisher, Manning.com. Or if you want to try before buy, you can go to the open source version, which is at https://rosenbaum.sc/book.
Okay, you gotta write that down. Okay.
Excellent.
Okay,
yeah, you can find my books on Amazon. You can find my books on Amazon. They're called Sovereignty Through Mathematics and Independence Reimagined. And they're translated into a couple of other languages. German and an Italian version of Sovereignty is coming out soon, and to Finnish, and a couple of other languages in the pipe. But meanwhile, I'm at Knut Svanholm on Twitter. That's at KNUTSVANHOLM. And my first book is available for free on the Cryptoeconomy podcast. Not many people know this, but it's in episode 308 of what is now Bitcoin Audible podcast, but it used to be called the Cryptoeconomy podcast with Guy's One. So it's all there with Guy's comments and everything.
Yeah,
and the books are both on Audible as well. Yep.
Yeah, it's been Audible.
And don't forget my articles and everyone else's articles in Citadel 21. This
shout out
fantastic
to
magazine here
Definitely. We'll check it out. Well, thanks so much, guys, and hope to talk again soon. But you know, let's sleep over this whole idea and brainstorming, because I think it could be really effective if it's done with the right creative people.
Yeah. Maybe we should start a Telegram group, Kayvan, for a Bitcoin movie.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. And maybe, you know, we can bring in also Guy Swan, because he has some film experience, Richard James, and other filmmakers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Creative people, music.
And, and American HODL to fund it all.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
we already talked to him, but he actually wanted to produce a movie. He didn't want to, you know, come up with $250,000. So
really?
Yeah, he was thinking like, I don't know. I wasn't even thinking that much, but you know, I mean, but I think we can have it crowdfunded if the trailer is really good, it goes really into the hearts and brains of the people. I think we can have it crowdfunded. You know.
Yeah, we should start a Kickstarter for it and do the whole thing.
Yeah, but
so you're looking for Kayvan, you're looking for a full-length movie?
Eventually, yeah. But for now, just like a 5 to 10 minute tease and trailer where we can really reach the masses, like something that is really visual, something like a movie, you know, something that is not, you know, not too far off, but that somehow it reaches people in their hearts, in their brains, in their comprehension level. Like, why are we doing this? You know, why Bitcoin? You know.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, thanks
let's,
so much.
Let's
again,
think
guys.
About this. Yeah. Thank you, Kevin. Thank
Have
you for reaching
night.
Out.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Bye,
thank you, Kevin.
Thanks. Goodbye.
Hope you loved this conversation with Carla Rosenbaum and Knut Svalenholm, some of the brightest and, you know, most brilliant authors in the Bitcoin space. Now, again, you know, we need, it's so urgent that we translate now this knowledge, this vision, so we have this comprehension into a film, into a movie. It's got to be tangible. People got to feel it, like really feel it, really in the hearts, in the brains, on every comprehension level, because each, you know, we are all individuals, of course, but we need to make it more tangible. What does it mean at all? Why Bitcoin? What does the daily life of the average person going to look like? And if we don't have like the, you know, the conviction, the trust, the knowledge, the comprehension, and, you know, if we don't really truly believe in what we know, what we understand, then how we expect to other people, how we really expect other people, you know, to believe in the future of Bitcoin. We gotta have the intention, the really strong intention to make this happen. If you're in the film industry, movie industry, whatever, music, graphic, creativity, entertainment, or you are, you know, an OG, or you wanna, you know, help us produce, or you wanna be executive producer, a sponsor, please get in touch with me. My email address is hello@thetotalconnector.com or kd@kevandavani.com. And you can, you know, my DMs are open. Get in touch with me. Let's make this happen. It's a one-shot opportunity that we can give ourselves, our children, the children of our children, and, you know, all beloved ones and total humanity. Let's make, you know, let's, I know this is possible. I know this is reality, but we, you know, we've been, maybe you just, maybe, you know, most people have lost hope and don't even know, you know, what is realistic? What is possible? You know, especially on the scientific technological level, on you know, in the dimension of freedom, you know, we can have thousands, hundreds of millions of free private cities out there, right? What if we have totally new transportation systems? What if we already have them, we can mass produce them? What if you pay less and less and less for more and more better and more innovative and unimaginable innovative products and services, right? So yeah, it is a totally, it will be totally new life in a deflationary economics, because you can then finally do what you've always dreamt of, whether it be painting, art, music, teach children, do research, go into science, technology, or, you know, do something that really, you know, is a that not only you love doing it, but because you know, it's the ethos of your heart, of your brain, of your soul, and you can really serve humanity, right? So let's do this, let's make this happen. And if you are, you know, if you can help us in any shape or form, get in contact with me. Make sure you follow Carla Rosenbaum and Knut Svalenholm, some of the brightest authors I've met. And well, thank you so much for support. And let me know any questions you have, any suggestion, anybody you know, that can help us. I would really appreciate any kind of feedback or support from any kind of, you know, sector out there. And thanks so much again. Talk to you soon.